Welcome to Exploration 1, Lecture 1. Now, we're going to do things slightly differently today. Firstly, I'm going to turn the radio off. That's better. Now, the first thing I want to do is I want to hear a little bit from each of the people in the class and find out who you all are and what you guys hope to get out of this. But we'll keep it fairly brief. And then we are going to get started on the various things that we're going to cover and that sort of stuff. So I'm going to get through a fair bit today, and we are going to see how we go. We've got a really good group this semester.
I may or may not be.
Okay. And we are certainly I'm really looking forward to teaching you guys, because we have a lot of very motivated people. Especially poor old Mr. Toner, who it's now just gone 2 o'clock in the morning, I believe, for him. That's all good. Now, so let's sort of start and find out who we've got. Alt-U to get to the tree view. Alt-U, we'll get you to the tree view in Ventrilo if anybody cares. Quick shortcut. Okay, let's start individually. Basically, on a match, on the back of a postage stamp, who you are and what you hope to get out of this course. And we're starting with Barry, if you're awake enough to do said thing. We'll come back to Barry then. Corey, perhaps?
Hi, yes, this is Corey Martin, located geographically in Western Canada, otherwise known as Alberta. As for my background, I've basically worked with more or less everything, going, excluding Linux. I've done a little bit with that, but not much. In terms of what I have my A-plus certificate, and I've taken some computer information technology. What I'm hoping to get out of this is I would like to pursue becoming Cisco certified and adding that to credentials. And you know, getting into either being a networking expert or perhaps an IT position. So that's kind of what I'm after.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, you are. And you can go next if you want.
Okay. I'm Barry Toner. I live in Northern Ireland. On this course, basically to torture myself. Now, to firm up a lot of networking stuff, because it's been a couple of years since I've done OSI and that kind of stuff. And hoping to improve career prospects in infrastructure support.
Okay. Now, David, are you with us? Can you tell us who you are, or are you otherwise occupied?
No, I'm here, and I'll be here for about the next 10 or 15 minutes, and then I'll have to rush off, I'm afraid. But anyway, I'm David Hathaway. I live in Penang, which is one of the states in Malaysia. So luckily I'm on the same time zone as Perth, which makes life a lot easier for me. I am an IT trainer and consultant at a non-profit organization down here in Penang. And I'm hoping to become a lot more knowledgeable about networking, because at the moment I know some stuff, but it's not really well organized. I've never studied it formally, and I just want to become a lot better at networking, so maybe I can move into that area.
Excellent, and good luck with the other training that you're heading off to after you when you do disappear. We won't take it personally when you disappear, but thank you for dropping in for the first part of the lecture. I think I have to increase my sensitivity. Drew, you're one of our ex-students. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Drew Mochak. Yeah, I went through ITE 1 twice because I'm a glutton for punishment, and I got my A-plus certificate and then did nothing with it. I am one of Kavi's success stories. I have very few aspirations and even fewer morals, so I basically am now here to try and sponge off those who are better than me. I tried to do exploration once last year, and I didn't do too well, so I thought I'd sit in and audit and hope to do a better job, possibly glean a bit more knowledge this time around. Pro tip, paying attention helps.
It does. It does. And may we recommend not listening to auto-tune the news or the latest political speech? There are two things that will certainly...
Wasn't me.
Just kidding. No. We all know Grace. Does Grace need to introduce herself?
I don't think so. I can if you don't... If you want me to. I'm just here. I'm sort of been in and out of the exploration class for like three semesters. Will I pass this term? Well, probably not. But I'll come in and out on occasion.
Okay, Jason, you're next. Cab off the rails, so to speak.
All right, my name is Jason Fair. I'm here in Toronto, Canada. I have done a lot of IT-related stuff. I've done some system admin, Linux. I did my Red Hat certified engineer and Solaris certified administrator several years ago. They're expired now, but I did those when I worked for Sun Microsystems. But I've never formally done the whole networking thing, so I'm looking to get my CCNA and possibly beyond that and add some stuff to my resume. So that's me.
Okay, now is John in our class? Yes. Okay, John, will you get to introduce yourself then?
Okay, am I coming through?
Okay,
am I coming through?
Yeah. Yes, you are, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I'm John from Saskatchewan in Canada, and I guess the reason I'm here is to learn a bit more about networking. I know a bit about some basic networking, and I've also studied one of my classes in university had some was networking related, but I don't know that too much about how networks are configured and set up outside of the kind of a home environment, so I'm hoping to pick up a bit more of that.
Luke is a lurker. He's from ITE1. Can you introduce yourself in 20 seconds or less, 20 seconds or less, Luke, or are you going to remain incognito?
No, I can, that's fine. My name's Luke, I'm from New Zealand, and I actually thought this was an ITE1 lecture, which I thought I would refresh myself on, which is why I turned up. So, yeah, go meet.
That's tomorrow.
In a row. Yeah.
Marshall, you're certainly one of our more persistent guests. You've done lots of courses with us. Do you want to introduce yourself to everybody so they know who you are when you come in on lecture?
Yeah, my name's Marshall Scott. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah. I have an IT support job at a small cardiology research center at the University of Utah. I don't know as much about networks as I'd like to. I'm taking this course to get an advanced look at what I'd go through if I registered for it in January. And that's only if I finish ITE1.
You'll finish. You're really, really close. Stop it.
Okay. Matthew Janusauskas, which I'm going to mispronounce until I see my brow display. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Actually, you did that brilliantly, so no worries. Matthew, and I live about 50 miles south of Chicago, and I've had a number of involvements with IT over the years, hands-on originally, and much less so, unfortunately, these days. I manage a technical support team, and I'm more of an administrator these days, and would like to brush up my skills and learn a lot more about networking, and quite honestly, really have some aspirations of maybe some exploring some career opportunities and a bit of a change down the road, maybe some systems administration or data center management, that type of thing. So looking forward to learning with you all.
Okay. Michael Yorking, did you want to introduce yourself to people so they know who you are?
Yep, no problem. This is Michael Capel here from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I'm supposed to be in the ITE1, and I thought that was tonight, so here I am, and I'll just stick around for a few minutes, but then I'll probably be.
Okay, and in fact, after we've heard all of these stories, Grace, can you just repost and tell everybody on the announce list when ITE1 is starting, just so,
case
we have a few more drop-ins?
Absolutely. There is no problems with that. We're Thursdays, or Wednesday nights for you guys.
That's okay. Anybody's allowed to come in and drop in and have a bit of a listen, but okay. Okay, Mukesh, you are lurking as well. I don't think you actually need to be here, but feel free to say hello to everybody if you wish and tell them who you are. Okay, all right. Well, Nehemiah, you're another lurker. Currently one of our newest additions doing discovery stuff. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell everybody who you are and occasionally, you know...
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Nehemiah Hall. I am currently actually taking my... studying for my CCNA elsewhere, but I'm kind of crashing this course to... kind of get an alternative perspective, and I'm also helping teach the CCNA, teach the Discovery 1 course. That's a recent development. But I figure this will give me an interesting and quite possibly useful alternative view from...
Should somebody ping Chris Nestrin?
Oh, yeah. I'll see if he's on the team talk.
I'll MSN him.
Okay.
I can find him. I can find him.
All right. I mean, he's supposed to be here, but I mean, if he doesn't turn up, that's cool. There's probably a good reason, but I think we should probably go find him just in case. The calendar gods are against him. All right. Who am I? I'm Kerry Hoth. If you Google me up, you will find some really snarky posts from me in 1998 on the Speak Up list when I was a lot younger, basically telling everybody that Window Eyes wasn't the screen reader of choice to be using for terminal emulation. If somebody can correct me on that or finds that Window Eyes is the screen reader of choice for terminal emulation, I'd like to hear about it. I've worked in IT since 1993, got my first computer in 1987, and took to computers like a duck to water. Basically, the big loves of my life changed from country music to information technology, which I think was possibly a step up. I've messed with a lot of things, Linux, Windows, Macs. Don't ask me any Mac questions, I don't like them much. And lots of networking stuff. I don't hold a CCNA. It's one of those things I've got to get around to doing at some point. Although I am somewhat qualified, given that I have been up at 3 o'clock in the morning slamming down cups of coffee, fixing ISP routers from halfway across the state of New South Wales.
I can't find him.
DM him.
I just said.
Okay. All right. We've just... Grace has just DM'd him in case he's around. Something may have come up. Actually, I'm just going to fire it. Actually, can you email him? Actually, Nehemiah, he tends to check his email. That's probably worth just in case as well. So, what are we going to do this semester? What are we going to do this semester? We are going to do Exploration 1. Now, the difference between Exploration 1 and Discovery 1 and 2... Now, I'll just cover this very briefly. Basically, you've got two different sets of ways of looking at the Cisco stuff. You've got Discovery, which is, Mummy, I just got a router and I want to get on the internet. And you've got Exploration, which is... Mummy, I'm sick of my brother doing horrible things to my network, so I want to subnet it and put him off on his own segment and limit his bandwidth to Facebook down to 8 kilobytes a second. So that's essentially the difference between Discovery and Exploration. The contents of Exploration 1 are contained in Discovery 1 and 2. So you guys are going to get a bigger dose of networking stuff than what you would do if you were doing Discovery. Once you have sat Exploration 1, you are then qualified to sit the CCENT, the Cisco Certified Entry-Level Networking Technician, which is, wow, I just saw a Cisco and it doesn't have any lights on the front, but I think I remember how to configure it. Okay, that's your entry-level Cisco certification-y thing. Why would you bother studying these courses? Why wouldn't you just go and torrent all of the books down on CCNA stuff and read them and go sit the test? Well, apart from the fact that torrenting the books down on Cisco is illegal, let's just leave that out of the equation for the moment, you actually get a discount for going through the Networking Academy. So I believe this is still current, although you would have to check up on the website. But as far as I recollect, Cisco gives you a 50% discount on taking the ENT and the CCNA if you study through the Networking Academy.
I believe. Which is probably more worth more than this course, actually. You paid for this course, actually. So there.
Yeah, it's $250 to take the exam. And it's usually $500, I think. Alrighty. The first thing we're going to talk about is the tools and stuff we have at our disposal to do this course and the various bits and pieces of stuff that we're going to use. And we're going to talk about the sorts of things we're going to cover and all that sort of stuff. Now, the first thing we were talking about was terminal emulation. Now, first of all, why would you want to be using terminal emulation? Well, one, because it's how you talk to Ciscos. Generally, if you're doing out-of-band management of Ciscos, out-of-band being a funky term for management that is not network-connected, in other words, via console ports, by auxiliary ports, that's out-of-band management. That'll be term one for our glossary. No, there is seriously a glossary in the notes. And that will allow you to configure routers and actually set up the initial configurations and recover passwords and all that good stuff. Chris, you've just joined the channel. Would you like to introduce yourself very briefly, because you missed out earlier? We're basically a little bit about who you are and stuff, just so everybody knows who you are.
Sure. hi, everyone. My name is Chris Nesterud. I'm in Arkansas in the U.S., I am here to basically see what I don't know about networking that I can improve on.
Excellent. All right. All right. So what we're currently talking about now is my train of thought derailed. Okay. So out of band management and stuff. The reason you're going to be using terminal emulation software is we have what we call a remote bundle. And the remote bundle, which I've got to finish documenting, has three routers, three switches, and six workstations all connected up together. So you have, basically it's split into three pods. So you have router one, switch one, workstations one and two are on the first pod, router two, workstations 3 and 4 and switch 2 on the second pod, and I'm sure you're all clever enough to figure out what would be on pod number 3. Pod number 2 is meant to be the ISP, and we will explain what this means later on in the course, but essentially router 2 provides the clocking for the other two routers, so you actually set the bandwidth on router 2 for the connections to router 1 and router 3. This remote bundle is accessible by Telnet. It's Telnet, not SSH, Telnet. And in fact, if you SSH in, you'll get something completely different. But I must stress that you need to Telnet to this remote bundle or you will not get in. Now, what we've basically got is we've got a 16-port serial switch, and it has a network port on it, and you Telnet into that serial switch, and the ports are then connected to the routers, the switches, and the consoles of the Linux workstations, all connected by serial. Can anybody give me a reason why it's all connected by serial? Does anybody have any idea why we went this way?
Jason?
Go ahead.
I would assume it's because if you're messing around with network interfaces and things, if you bring an interface down, you could lose all of your access to the equipment if it was networked.
Absolutely. And if one of you doesn't manage to knock the tree branch out from under you by reconfiguring a network interface that you were SSH'd across to at some point in this course, I will be very surprised. You tend to do it and then go, oops, and then you go back in via the serial links and sort it out. That's right. If you reconfigure a network interface that you are connected through, you will actually lose connectivity. And there is many of an administrator who has remembered that when they've been remotely accessing a server at, say, 3 o'clock on a Saturday morning, only to realise that the people at work aren't going to be able to reboot it until 9 o'clock on a Monday morning. Looks significantly itself. Okay, any questions so far? There shouldn't be too many, I wouldn't think.
There's mention of virtual machines on the QCAT page. Is that something that we care about?
Not really. The virtual machines on that page are generally used for ITE1. Although, if you want to be able to VPN into the remote bundle, which is actually possible, and actually connect a virtual machine onto the bundle and have network connectivity into the actual bundle so you can communicate with the web interfaces of the Linksys routers, then you might be interested in getting the virtual machines. The username for... I'm going to key this into... Is everybody in chat?
No, yet.
It's Jason, I'm here.
What's the matter? Yep, okay.
It's generally a good idea for everyone to be in chat when you start the lecture. Just FYI.
Yeah, I'd sort of agree with that. Having the chat window open isn't going to annoy anybody except for if you perhaps... if you don't like having lots of windows open. If you don't like lots of windows open, this is not the right course for you. Like, if you get upset when your Alt-Tab order has more than four things in it, may we suggest Discovery? And I'm kind of serious about that. We're not going to open, like, 300 windows to confuse you all, but you will get a few terminals open, especially when you do password reset labs and stuff. For anybody else who's interested, has anyone here played with nutils? I'm assuming by the deafening silence, no?
I have not, it's Jason.
Okay. Nutils is a package put together by... And I realise this is going to cause some people a little bit of stress when I mention this, but I can assure you that the stuff is good. It's put together by Tyler Spivey and Nico Carpenter. And it... didn't blow my machine up. It's a utility that allows you to have 10 slots for Windows. And basically what you do is you, by using hotkeys, I can't remember what the default keys are, I think they're Control Shift Windows 1 through 0, you can actually put Windows away and pull them back up again, and then you can have multiple Windows stacks, and you can actually put Windows... away and pull them back at will. So say, for example, you've got a chat window open and you want to put that window away, you hit Control Shift Windows 1 and it makes a little noise that says it's put away and it disappears from your Alt-Tab order. And then you can either pull it back from the task tray or you can actually pull it back from a Windows stack. Now, under Windows 7, there is a problem with the default hotkeys. I believe Control Windows 1 or whatever has already been taken by Windows 7. So you've got to change the hotkey in the initialization file to actually make it work under Windows 7. But once you make that change, it goes like a mad thing. Does that sound interesting to anyone?
Very much so.
Yeah, definitely.
Nutils is different because the windows actually disappear. they actually drop out of the alt tab list. Whereas with Windows 7, I believe that the Windows hacks have to be visible in the task tray for you to use Windows navigation, Windows number navigation. Oh, and it makes cool noises like pew, which the Windows one doesn't do. But I mean, I'm not saying that that's a justification for using it. You can also kill stuck processes with it. So if you're if you have focus on a process that has locked up your computer, and no, I'm not referring to Quitta 5 beta when it updates your buffers, and you press Control Shift Windows F4 or something, I can't remember the exact key, we'll have to RTFM on that, it will make the sound of breaking glass and actually end task the current process very nastily, but sometimes getting your computer back. So, go ahead. Somebody keyed up. What, did they want to say something? Anyway, if you want NUtils, it's in... there is a mirror of it in Extras on the QCAT website. We'll come back to it later in the course for things. I've just started using it, and it's very powerful. For anybody who's familiar with virtual audio cable, that's how I shovel JAWS in here, and there's actually an auto IT script that will set up all of your audio repeaters and rename them for you, so I can, at the press of a button, have two virtual cables, three audio repeaters, and JAWS turning up on Ventrilo without me having to do it by hand. This makes me very happy. If you don't know what virtual audio cable is, it's not really important at this point, unless you would like to get JAWS onto Ventrilo, and I would refer you to the Cavicast on virtual audio cable if that's something that interests you, or you can Skype me up at home and ask me. Alright. The username for the virtual machines, if you want them, is being keyed into chat. I'm kind of keeping it off the recording because it's not really a secret, but we don't want everybody downloading the virtual machines. Now, watch the capitalization on the password, or it won't work. So those are the credentials for the virtual machines. We have a Windows XP virtual machine. We have a few Linux virtual machines, and I believe we still have a Windows 2000 virtual machine. So that is the virtual machines, and if you want to use them for installing OpenVPN and stuff onto, you will have to download those and set them up, and there's a nice set of instructions on how to do that once you get into the virtual machines area. Please understand that if you ask me a question that is answered in the instructions, I am going to send you straight back to read them. If you then read the instructions and you don't manage to find your answer, I will then answer your question. I feel this is fair warning. Why? Because it took us like 2 hours to write the instructions up, and they're really quite good, and they honestly do give you the passwords and everything for the virtual machines and the extraction instructions. I'm not going to try saying that 10 times quickly today. You will need 7-zip, or I believe WinRAR... I don't know whether WinRAR does multi-volume 7-zips, okay? So if you use WinRAR and it blows up, go get 7-zip. That's pretty much my official take on it. Has anyone not used 7-zip? Oh, good. Looks like everybody has used 7-zip. I probably shouldn't ask questions in double negative like that. I apologise. Okay. Any questions, comments so far? Anybody want to ask anything before we continue on to terminal emulation?
Just briefly, the Windows... the Linux distributions. I heard they were quite old. Are they still kind of a valid thing, like if I was to learn Linux on them?
Well, if you learn Linux anywhere, it'll be useful to you. But if you want one with Firefox and OpenOffice and... email clients and a graphical user interface, no, the distributions there are not the ones you want to fetch. You want to get yourself a copy of Vinix. So if you are the I must operate in a GUI sort of person, our Linux images are not the ones you should be fetching. If you want a GUI, may I recommend Ubuntu, Vinix, or one of those sorts of distributions. So I hope that answers that.
Fair enough, thanks.
Carrie, were you going to give us the password for the virtual bundle or not yet?
Oh, yeah, I can do that. That's easy. The password for the virtual bundles is basically... and now how it works is when you log into the serial switch... I'll basically, just to give you guys some background, most groups have been sort of terrified of the virtual bundle, and I haven't dared, like, point them at it until week 3 or 4. But it's okay, we'll just give you guys the passwords today. I do have backups of everything, but please try not to be destructive. You are just creating more work for me. And if by some bizarre manner of stuff you manage to erase the flash on one of the Cisco routers, I will be helping you put it back. So please try not to do that. It's not a lot of fun. The passwords for the remote bundle, which you, when you connect to the remote bundle, actually I'll get to the passwords in a minute. The terminal emulator that I am using, because it's the one that I am most familiar with and it works very well for me, is TerraTerm. There is a download of TerraTerm in extras. There is the 3-line JAWS script that you need to compile to make TerraTerm read the Windows automatically. And you then need to change a number of settings in TerraTerm to make it track the cursor properly. Those are documented under General Instructions Networking, but in a nutshell, you need to set your cursor shape to horizontal line or vertical line, and you also need to ensure that your backspace sends the correct thing, whether it sends a delete or a control, pardon me, H, and that is set in keyboard options. I have heard that CRT works well. You're a CRT user, aren't you, Chris? I'll ask him again in a minute. Okay, how do you get it? Does it read text when it comes in? Because when I saw it, my friend was sort of went into say all mode and it would sort of read stuff when it came in, which meant that
There's a very simple JAWS script that I've made that I can post a URL for that allows it to read the text.
Okay, so CRT is another option. It's a commercial package and it costs dollars. TerraTerm is free and doesn't cost dollars. But if you have dollars and you want a really good terminal package, CRT is pretty cool. There is also... I haven't seen TerraTerm read... I haven't seen HyperTerminal read automatically. Does it, Nehemiah? Do you remember? Does it actually read automatically or do you have to JAWS cursor a lot?
Yeah, it does. It does. It occasionally gets a little bit buggy, but it does. It's what I've used. I'm kind of curious whether TerraTerm would work better. I may try it and compare.
Okay, let us know what you find. Go ahead, sorry.
Windows 7, Nehemiah, you don't have HyperTerminal. I think there might be a way to get it, but by default, it's not there.
I was told today that there's a HyperTerminal for Windows 7. I just got Windows 7 today, like... 2 days ago, so I don't know with Windows 7, but I was told today that there is a HyperTerminal for Windows 7 that I will have to try. That's what I was told today. I haven't actually gotten it myself.
Grace had to get some .exe files and DLLs and copy them into C Windows system, and then she got like an older HyperTerminal running under Vista. I have no idea how you get it going, but I think some Google foo might yield some results. May I suggest, and if you do get it going, we'd like to hear about it, but may I also just suggest that installing TerraTerm is probably not a bad idea in case you've got something else that definitely works under Windows 7.
Yeah, I probably will be trying out TerraTerm just to see how, yeah, just to see it.
Just a note, guys, I have only provided the source code for the JAWS script, because I had a .jsb file up there and people tried to copy it in and...
off.
Okay, see you, Luke.
My speakers are doing something weird.
So if you have I took the JSB down. So apparently, because of the way my web server is configured, when you press enter on the JSS, it's probably going to come up in a window. Guys, can you just please copy and paste the text into the script editor and press, you know, save as and just compile it, because it will work. Otherwise, right-click on the file and save it. It's something that I probably could fix, but it's probably not a high priority. So, anybody here not know how to compile a JAWS script?
Also, your website doesn't have headings on it. That's, like, totally unacceptable, man.
We had a student that, well, no, not a student. We had a member of the public. We had a member of the public who went to our Cavicast page just to fill everybody else in, and they were very upset that we didn't have a heading level 3 for each Cavicast. Obviously,
just,
we rushed to fix that one.
She was just mad that it was an index of slash, and I asked her what exactly she would have preferred, and she's like, well, I don't know. I guess I'd like them. It would be nice if they had headings.
Yeah, that was sort of my opinion as well.
I mean, it's a nice feature. I agree that it'd be a nice feature, but really.
Now, all I can say to you all is careful what you wish for, because we will make you implement it. And you will give me the HTML and I will put it up, and you can have whatever you want if you implement it. Okay? That's how it works.
Then you'll have to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we ended up explaining to this person that the reason we didn't have funky HTML pages in there was because we didn't have them auto-update and the indexes just worked. Has anybody been in the Cavicast area?
Yeah, I checked out the NVDA presentation. It was brilliant.
She still complains about not understanding Flat Review, by the way. Anyway.
Well, unfortunately, she's not involved in our exploration course, so we will waste no more time on her. The NVDA one was excellent. That was one of the ones we were really proud of. NVDA, if you haven't listened to the NVDA one, may I gently recommend it. It teaches you how that weird object nav works, which is basically the Mac interacting thing upside down, if you want it in a nutshell. And we had one of the lead developers in, so, you know, if he doesn't know how to drive NVDA, we're all in a lot of trouble.
It was
yes,
very well done.
Corey.
I just wanted to ask if, in regards to TerraTerm, when you install it, it wants to install a lot of extra add-on stuff. Is there anything in there that you can forego installing? It wants to install some kind of macro thing and some other things that are, I wouldn't think necessary, but maybe you could correct.
You can uncheck them and just install TerraTerm and its help files, and then honestly, if it blows up, you can go back and reinstall all the other components if you find you need them.
Okay, yeah, because I installed it before once, and it had a lot of startup stuff and some other weird stuff. So
they've actually tidied the TerraTerm down. It was, I don't know whether anybody remembers, but it was stuck at version 2.3 for ages and ages and ages, and it had no SSH support. And then somebody released some unofficial mods to it to add SSH support, which involved copying executables into its program folder and all of these sorts of nasty, unpleasant things. And then that started being redeveloped again by another set of developers, and you can actually get it off the internet. I don't think our version is up to date, as far as I think 4.67 came out, but it does work. If you are the sort of person who goes into custom of every program and knocks out all of the features you don't think you want, and you probably don't need the menu, and you probably don't need TTL edit, and you probably don't need the other things, feel free to get rid of them. If you have Cygwin installed, however, you may want the TerraTerm Cygwin support, because it'll allow you to SSH and stuff into your Cygwin, and it's quite accessible and quite nice.
Okay, great.
Okay, so obviously I'd like to see everybody with TerraTerm up and running by next week, if possible. If you are running JAWS, you should be good to go. If you are running NVDA, you should be good to go. If you are running WindowEyes, you won't be. Don't know what to do about that. Try NVDA. NVDA version 2011.1 and later has support for TerraTerm in it, and it auto reads.
That's cool.
Yes, John.
Just a couple of questions here. You mentioned about connecting serially to the remote bundle so that you wouldn't knock yourself out of the networking as you're configuring. So are there kind of two ways of connecting, either to the switch to do it serially, and do we ever connect to the actual machines using SSH or something? And the other question is regarding scheduling, how it's managed so two people aren't trying to remote into the remote bundle at the same time and both and cause each other trouble.
Okay. Just read the backlog in the chat here. Okay. All right. See how that works. We actually do have a site license of WindowEyes. I must confess to not being a big fan. I find it a bit laggy, but then again, I'm impatient, so I tend to run JAWS or NVDA because Jamie is about as allergic to lag as I am. So that's what we run. To answer your two questions, you'll notice if you went looking down on the channel list in Ventrilo, there are channels for Pod 1, Pod 2, and Switch Pod. We probably need a channel for Pod 3. We have got to do that at some point. The idea is that if you're using the remote bundle, you should also be signed into Ventrilo and sitting in one of those Pod channels, so that if you come onto Ventrilo and notice that there are other people working on the remote bundle, you can then go down into their pod channel and talk to them and see if you want to work together or whether you're going to fight about who's scheduled on when. We are working on a funky, amazing web-based scheduling system that will be incredible and allow you to submit your bookings, and then it will email you confirmations of your bookings, do your washing and your laundry. But it's not here yet. So basically what happens is, as far as connecting into the routers, so what you've got is you've got the console ports are all connected into the serial switch, and you basically see the console ports for the switches, you see the console ports for the routers, and you see the serial consoles for the Linux boxes. Those Linux boxes are connected into the switch is connected to the router, and the routers are connected together with serial cables. It sounds like I'm doing them bones song, but I'm not. That's how it all hooks up. And you can actually, if you configure the entire topology correctly, you should be able to SSH from workstation 1 to workstation 6 going through three routers and actually get there. And yes, this is an assignment I'm going to set you, so you have been forewarned. Do I expect you all to do that next week? Of course not. That would be silly. I mean, you guys don't have the... Well, you may have some of the skills, but you won't have all of the skills you need to do it by next week, so I'm certainly not going to insist that you all configure that sort of topology next week. Now, the other thing that is worth mentioning at this point is, in this class, we expect you all to work together. Group work is good. Group cheating is not, but group work is amazing. If you can help each other out, if you guys can work on similar time zones to each other and actually jump on here and actually work together, that is encouraged whenever it can happen. There are going to be labs where occasionally, well, maybe a little more than occasionally I won't know the answer to something. And I will be using Google and every resource at my disposal to get the answer, just like you guys are. And we are all going to work together and work out the solution and make whatever it is go. If this is not the sort of learning that you like, I'm sorry, but it's a really good way to learn things if you're trying to make things happen on somewhat of a time schedule. We're not trying to up your stress levels and bring your blood pressure up, but we are trying to show you how IT people work in the real world, working stuff out as they go. I'm sure anybody would agree with me that things don't always go as smoothly as you'd like in IT. And that sometimes you actually do have to work things out as you're going along.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Now, the other thing that's a really good resource, and I tell everybody this every year and nobody downloads it, so guys, prove me wrong here. Under General Instructions, you should have the Ciscopedia. Please get it, download it, and install it. It is a reference to all of your Cisco commands in help file format. Does everybody know how to use help files under Windows? The ones where you press F6 and stuff, the CHMs.
There's a CHM of that?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Holy shit. I want that.
It's on QCAT.org. You may wish to go and grab it.
I don't know about the rest of you guys, but seriously, as someone who's taken part of, like, half of CCNA once and is going through this again, you want that. I'm getting it.
So everybody's cool with CHM files? You all know how to access help documents? I'm seriously asking this question because I've known people who don't. And if you don't, I'm quite happy to tell you how to use it. Do it now. But I'm just checking that everybody knows how to access a help file.
You click it and it opens.
Yeah, but you know how there's like that list of topics and you've got to use your arrow keys and expand the tree view and then press enter and then press F6 to jump across and read the actual pane? You know, that complicated stuff?
Whoa, slow down, Mr. Big Techie Guy.
Exactly.
Okay, here's how it works. On a CHM file, you press enter.
I think he's being sarcastic.
No. Oh, okay.
Are you being sarcastic, Drew?
Yeah, I was.
You are, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay, Neymar. No, he's yes. being sarcastic.
Okay.
Sorry, man.
Hey, I'm.
He's
I'm
not.
Sorry, I work with students that have never heard of such a thing.
Now, one of the other things I want to point out at this point, that was a bit of a tautology, but hey, you know. And you guys have been doing a really good job of it this morning. If you have a question, ask. Why do you think they pay me? Why do you think they give me money? Is it because I'm a great bloke and I need more money?
I have no idea.
No. No. It's because I'm actually paid to teach you guys. Now,
it's because you know the bodies are buried.
No, that's next lecture. The reality is that we are here to answer your questions, we are here to support you, and we are here to facilitate your learning. Am I going to spoon-feed you Exploration 1? No. Am I going to assist you in a guru-like manner to obtain your Exploration 1? Yes. So ask me questions, and I will do my best to answer them. Yes, Barry.
Do you use, just sort of going back to, you were talking about subnetting earlier, do you use the 256 chart to explain that?
No, I actually do binary to decimal conversion, and then I talk about the powers of two, and we talk about how that works, and I show you all how to do the conversion with Windows calculator to add the powers up, although in the Cisco exam you are not allowed to use any calculator. So get used to adding numbers up that are going to get to no more than 256, generally speaking. We have a pegboard. Now, what a pegboard is it's a board. I don't know the exact dimensions, but it's about a foot and a half wide by about 9 inches from back to front. And it has three rows of 32 holes drilled in it. And it has a vertical divider line every 8 holes. And you stick little bits of dowel or pegs into the holes where you want a 1. And you leave the dowel out of the holes where you want a 0. Now, obviously they're made of wood and we can't ship them, but if you know somebody who has a drill and some dowel and some board, and you could get yourself a pegboard made, you would find it one of the most useful things you ever had. For example, Grace is not the fastest at converting binary to decimal and vice versa, but she would be incredibly slower if she did not have the use and aid of a pegboard. That's a fair thing to say, isn't it?
Totally.
If you are looking for instructions and pictures and stuff on how to make a pegboard, and now the pegboard is optional, you don't have to use it. We think it's an amazing idea. It's one of the better ideas my boss has come up with. You can get the schematics from General Instructions Schematics. Hang on. The schematics are up on General Instructions Pegboard, and it's got GIFs and stuff so that you can make it.
Home, there, locked it in, still up.
I'm getting your speech on channel, which is a bit ironic. I'm not sure. Whoever they are, they're using DeckTalk. No, they're using Eloquence?
Curriculum.
Yeah, it's a DeckTalk.
It's not a DeckTalk, it's John.
No, it's not. It's Eloquence. It's curriculum being spelt out very slowly. In 2008, we were still running CCNA 1. It's a completely different curriculum. Completely different. The whole thing is laid out differently. The examples are different. Everything is different.
I don't know about... Is that the same one that we were using back in 2005? Because I know from 2005 to now is completely different.
Yeah, there was like the CCNA 1 one, and then in Chapter 3 you had like optical fiber. And have you ever tried explaining the properties of light refraction to totally blind people? That was fun.
I remember taking that.
That was fun. We don't talk about light refraction in this one, luckily. Look, it was an interesting exercise. I think the funniest question I ever got, just as a comedy aside, back in 2007, one of the Indians said, "Please, sir, what is the difference between male connector and female connector?"
Well, you see,
that was,
females got holes,
yeah, it's all right, Drew.
Males got it's, pins.
That's right, that's essentially what I said.
Male's got the pokey bits, and... Alright, anyway.
Yeah, okay, alright. Settle down, Drew, or I will have to boot you. Now, where was I up to? Okay, so yeah, exploration is different to the stuff we did in 2000. When did the changeover happen, Ian? It was 2008, wasn't it? For exploration discovery? Yeah, so it's different. It's different. I think the first time I taught... exploration was... Yeah. Okay.
I don't think you guys offered exploration until the second semester I showed up at.
Yeah, we made the decision to jump to it. It was available one semester beforehand, but we weren't running it then because we hadn't really had a look at it. Alright. So, that's all good. We have... has everybody read Chapter 1?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I had the last exploration class out.
I'll tell you what we got. It was Christmas time, just to make you all jealous. We actually scored 3 Cisco 800 series routers with ADSL connections on them. So that's going to be lots of fun. That's a good way to learn about Cisco, is to have one as your ADSL router. We don't recommend you go and buy one, though, because they're like $800, and they're very expensive. Chapter 1 is... Do I have to go through... Like, is everybody pretty happy with Chapter 1? It's basically, we are a Netrix sense... Blah, we are a Netrix... Third time lucky. We are a network-centric world. Why do they have to put phrases like that in the curriculum? And we have blogs,
see if you're paying attention.
Wikis. This is probably true. I'm going to have to get a double shot in the coffee next week. Blogs, wikis, online presences, and there are a couple of labs in there. We look at Google Earth. We look at TikiWiki, and we look at IRC, which you don't actually have to set up. Anybody here never used an instant message program on your computer? Has anyone never used an instant message program on your computer? Right. So, you need to write up the reflection questions on the instant messaging lab under the assumption that you have used some form of instant messaging program. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's Facebook chat, Windows Live Messenger, Skype, or IRC. I just want the reflection questions about security and stuff written out so I can pass you on that lab. Why is instant messaging software a bad idea? Why does your work tend to block it? I have dreams about blocking Facebook, but it's never going to happen. That's that lab. So basically the chapter talks about how we all love our network, and we all love the internet, and we're all interconnected by the internet. And let me tell you from experience, if you want to see somebody go from happy to miserable in about 5 seconds flat, just disconnect the internet on my wife. And she gets very sad and has to go find something else to do. Anybody else experienced lack of internet? There are three types of death. There is brain dead, physical death, and disconnection from the internet.
Yeah, I just had it last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Oh, isn't it fun? Yes, Matthew.
You left out panic.
Sorry, just on the labs, I haven't read through them yet, but I was surprised to see the first one on Google Earth. My questions, it's fine if they'll be answered when I read the document, but I was under the impression Google Earth was unusable with a screen reader.
Apparently you can get at some of the menus and look at what's in the menu bar. You don't have to install Google Earth if you really don't want to. You just have to understand what Google Earth does and how it works. In other words, it uses GPS and stuff, and it uses satellite pictures, and it's a graphical map of the world that you can scroll and look at stuff on. I mean, it's exposing you to these things. If you've got some idea of what Google Earth is, I can probably pass you on the lab, and you should be fine. Has everyone here used some sort of GPS technology?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but I know what it is.
Oh, Marshall, you got an iPhone, haven't you?
Not yet. I only have an iPod, but I've seen, you know, I've gone through the demos of the Trekker Breeze, so I'm not totally unfamiliar with
it. Oh, okay. Well, we jailbroke our iPod Touches, and we are running Ariadne GPS with connectivity through our mobile phone. Not for the faint of heart, however, and I will not suggest that you jailbreak anything officially. But yes, you too can use your iPod Touch for navigation so inclined.
It's legal in the US.
Yeah.
It's legal to jailbreak.
Yeah, it is, but I don't also want to be, like, call number one for support, because, like, it can go bad.
Ironic.
Oh, fair.
You can restore your iPod stuff. I mean, if your iTunes backups are up to date, jailbreaking really isn't that dangerous. But yeah, we actually have used our iPod Touches for navigation with both Navigon and Ariadne GPS. And we won't talk about GPS much more, except for to say that it's kind of cool, and lots of blind people would be a lot more lost without it.
With regards to the labs, do we, hand them into you this week? Is that kind of the...
The labs are due by this time next week. You have a week to get them done, if possible. Thank you. Please, if you need one more week, I need an email from you. And if you... need another week beyond that. In other words, if you can't do them by the week after next, you're going to have to explain to me what the problem is, and then we'll talk about it. It's really important that people keep up with their labs as much as possible. And you are sending them to... You are sending them there until I get the exploration instructor's alias set up, which will happen later today. But I will announce that on the list. Yes, Jason?
I had a question about labs. So I looked... Well, two questions, I guess. So there's labs and activities. Like, one of the activities was doing the SANS security stuff and some things like that.
You do both.
Do both labs and activities? Okay, both. So turn both in?
Yes, you
and
do.
And then my other question was...
Yep.
The other question was the lab that talked about Wiki, it wasn't TikiWiki, it was like TWiki or something they said to go to, and I was having all kinds of problems with that site. It wasn't letting me create accounts, and yeah, it was weird. Is it TikiWiki I'm supposed to use? Because that's not what's listed in the lab there.
Ah, okay, there are too many different wikis, and I am confounded and confused. It probably is TWiki. Let me... Yeah, there's lots of wikis. I'm not sure. It probably is TWiki. I will check that site. It used to let you register for test accounts and play in the sandbox. We're supposed to have an Eagle server, which I'm still trying to get up and running, so that you can play with the wiki here. If that doesn't work, I'm going to look at rolling out a virtual machine with TWiki on it, and you guys can play with it. Or at least if you can get access to any sort of wiki. It doesn't matter what sort of wiki it is. As long as you've seen some sort of wiki and you've got some idea how to edit a wiki, and you can answer the questions in a sensible manner, as if to say, yes, I saw a wiki, I saw you could edit it, and this is essentially how you do it. I don't care if you use... Oh, there's one of those text-based wikis. Can't remember what it's called. Which brings up an interesting point. We are looking at setting up a wiki on ciscavision.org. If anybody has a suggestion as to which one they think we should use, please let us know. Whoever just typed something into chat, go ahead.
It's Matthew. Carrie, I've been experimenting and been using Google Sites for a project internally at work, and have had a fair amount of success with that, so that might be an option.
Yeah, we'll consider it. I kind of have a problem with selling my soul to Google. I'm a bit scared of what Google is becoming and the amount of control it has over our lives, and perhaps I'm just an over-paranoid person. We'll see also what it's worth, like how much it costs to sign up with Google and what the restrictions are, whether we can do that. We will certainly consider it as an option.
It's free for you as one bonus.
Yeah, although I think the content that you put up there belongs to Google, essentially, which I don't know whether that's a problem or not. We'll have to discuss that.
Yeah, fair enough. That's probably true. I think everything with their name on it is owned by them. I think you're right.
Facebook does the same stuff.
Who, what?
So does.
Sorry, Drew?
So does Dropbox, actually. But doesn't Facebook do the same stuff? And Dropbox now?
No, Dropbox doesn't. And in fact, if you go and reread the terms of service of Dropbox, and I've heard a whole lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt about this, and it's certainly not true. If you actually go and reread the terms of services that they've reworded, they don't own everything you've got, but what they do say is that a certain subset of employees have access to the contents of your Dropbox, with a subnote, to say that if you use TrueCrypt, you can have nobody have access to the data contents of your Dropbox, if you're that paranoid.
And TrueCrypt is a very useful and cool little application.
Yeah, I just did a review on that on my site, actually. It's pretty cool. Actually setting it up with Dropbox.
You did a presentation on setting what up with Dropbox? Sorry, I missed that. Somebody from India was messy.
TrueCrypt.
TrueCrypt.
Ah, okay. Now, the other thing I'll mention to people, has everybody here played with Ninite?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Ninite is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I have to say I haven't.
Oh,
Carrie knows I have. I talked about it. Was it last night? Or was it at orientation?
I don't remember. Ninite is quite a handy little tool.
www.ninite.com. The other one that you may not be aware of is www.ninite.com/accessible, which is all of the stuff that is said to be accessible with screen readers, and you can even get an automatic install of NVDA from there. Ninite, or Ninite, depending on how you want to pronounce it, is an amazing little utility that you log on to, and if you pay the money, you can get extra features, but you check a whole series of boxes, and then a pile of software downloads and installs onto your computer.
Carrie, do you know who tells Ninite what stuff is accessible?
Users do.
Yeah, users do.
How do you contribute what is or isn't accessible?
There's a link down the bottom that says, if you look down the bottom of the page, it says, if you have any suggestions on this page, link, contact us. And you go down there and you tell them, as far as I remember.
Oh, oopsies, okay.
So what it does is you check the box and then it generates like a 400 or 200 kilobyte installer file that you can put on your flash disk or whatever, and then when you need something installed, you run that file and it'll go download all of the stuff that you, the programs you said you want, and it'll put them on automatically for you. So you can walk away and have lunch.
The other useful thing that some people don't realize is you can run it periodically and it will update those programs on your system as well. It's useful for periodically. I just run it periodically to update the programs on my system.
Yes, whenever you run it, it goes and grabs the latest version according to Ninite, which they have apparently an automatic script on it that pulls websites for new versions of all the stuff, so it knows pretty soon when.
Very useful for automated installs and keeping your stuff up to date, or for administration purposes.
Even the annoyance of like updating your flash, it saves you aggravation. It's very nice.
Especially flash.
Yeah, they have like a specific thing for flash.
There's updateflash.org. Just so that we've covered this in lecture, because everybody whinges and whines about flash, there are actually .msi installers for flash, and those are actually accessible. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't go to updateflash.org and be happy, but I am also pointing out that Adobe does have accessible installers for Flash. You don't have to battle with the button, Q button, I button if you don't want to. So, just in case you're deploying and you need the MSIs, they exist. Can you talk to Chan Jessica M? Are you on Skype? Okay, because I'm just going to close out of Skype. Oh, he can't understand the personalized feedback that was generated or something. Well, none of them are online and I'm in lectures, so. Sorry about that. Internal wibbles. I'm just signing out of Skype. There we go. I just disappeared. Look at that. All right. The other thing I want to give people, a lot of you have this, but that is my home Skype. Please understand that if you call me on that Skype and I'm at home, I could be drunk, I could be partying, I could tell you to go away and get a life, or I could simply say, no, not now, I'm hanging up. However, I usually don't, but that is my home Skype. If you really need to get hold of me, that is how you do it. On the home Skype.
And I'll give you mine as well in case you want. It's administrative junk like exams activated or any administrative stuff that if Carrie isn't around, I may be able to.
However, the preferred contact medium is email. Okay? Why? Because we've got a record of it. Why? Because when I've forgotten and you go, I emailed you, and I go back through my inbox and go, ooh, you totally did, and it's all my fault. Okay? The procedure for getting exams activated is that you email CAVI instructors and you ask for the exams to be activated, and I'll talk about all that in a minute, and they will go up for a week. Please try not to Skype IM me for this stuff because I have the attention span of a goldfish with memory loss. Although apparently goldfishes don't have that short of an attention span, but I'm not even going there. I really will forget. And if you email me, it's likely to happen. And it's one of my quirks, and I will put this straight up. If you ask me a complicated question and I don't have time to answer it, I'm going to ask you to email me the question. It does one of two things. One, it allows me to go off and research it. And secondly, if you can't be bothered emailing me, I can't be bothered answering you. I know that sounds really horrible, but you'd be surprised how many questions it saved me from answering over the years.
I think I'll start that policy tomorrow. Cheers for that.
It's you'd be surprised.
It's true.
Yeah, if somebody's standing in front of you, they'll ask you a question. And when I was at TAFE, one of my lecturers that was the database teacher used to say, email me. And I sort of asked him one day, why do you tell people to do this? He says, you know what? If they can't be bothered emailing me, I can't be bothered answering it. But if they can be bothered emailing me, I'm more than happy to answer it, and I've got a record of it so I can actually sit down and look it up and chase it down. Brief question there, Maya. Did you manage to get the accessible curriculum to fly, or you haven't had a look yet? The use accessible link at the top.
I haven't looked on the QCAT site yet. I had seen it work just on the Cisco one. I hadn't looked back at the QCAT.
Okay, one of the other things I'm going to cover briefly, and I covered this in the discovery, so I'm going to cover it here. The curriculum is accessible Flash. Did he just say those two words in the one sentence? He did. Accessible Flash. I know, you guys thought you'd never hear it. It's 2011,
what?
And this curriculum is accessible Flash. It's okay, Drew. Get Jamie to pick you up off the floor or something.
What?
Now, oh, okay. Well, don't fall over then. This curriculum is Flash-based. You will need Flash installed. It's Flash-based. You will need Flash installed. I know you all think I'm being stupid, but you also need... I don't know whether you need JavaScript enabled for the curriculum. You do need it for Cisco.NetAcad, though. So be aware that you want JavaScript and you want Flash. A lot of you are going to ask me, perhaps, so I want to read my curriculum on my BrailleNote / BrailleSense / PacMate / insert favorite note taker of choice. How am I going to do that if the curriculum is in Flash? You're all smart people. You can unofficially copy and paste the website content into text files and do it yourself. I am not going to distribute text dumps of the exploration curriculum this semester unless you submit a request to instructors and give me justification as to why I should. Now, I can't help you with window eyes, but if you are using JAWS, you want to go into your Internet Explorer options and turn on copy using virtual cursor as opposed to copy using on-screen highlight. And then, funnily enough, Control-A, Control-C will grab you the entire page content and you can pull it up a chapter at a time. Yes, I believe this is inconvenient. However, Cisco will not continue to work on accessible curriculum if we don't use it and promote it and feedback and actually make use of the accessibility stuff that they are giving us. It's also worth mentioning that sighted people get the same curriculum as you do, and all of your diagram descriptions are embedded in the curriculum. Has everybody seen that?
Yeah, it's very cool.
They actually got the diagram description texts from us, and then they embedded those into the exploration and the discovery curriculums. So they actually describe all the pictures. Unfortunately, we do not have the diagram descriptions embedded in the exams at this time. You will need to pick up your exam diagram descriptions from the QCAT website, preferably before you start the exam. And then you will be able to match them up with the question and take the exams. Any questions on anything so far? I realize this is all a lot of administrivia, but it's kind of important. Yeah, people do care. Look, don't get me wrong. We have nothing against WindowEyes as such. I just don't know how to use it. And I'll be the first one to put my hand up and go, I am a WindowEyes newbie, and I don't have the patience at this point to sit down and listen to the entire tutorial. That is my problem. I fully admit that. Thank you.
Oh, no, I just wanted to pass it on. I don't think anyone's using it, but then it's...
Okie dokie. So, Chapter 1. Is anybody ready to take the Chapter 1 test yet? Should I... Oh, you get at least 3 goes at each exam. However, if you bomb an exam, you probably want to talk to me and find out what you got wrong. Well, at least I would prefer you to talk to me and find out what you got wrong so I can actually tell you the answers. And then you can go back and have another shot at the exam. Is anybody ready to take the Chapter 1 test yet? Should I activate it?
There is no Chapter 1 test.
Ah, yes, you're right. Exploration's an odd one. You don't get a Chapter 1 test. Okay, so nobody's taking Chapter 1 test because there isn't one. Forget what I just said then. Has anybody... Everybody's logged in and set up their profiles on netacad.net?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, it's a pain. Yep. I'm the first one to admit that it's a pain, but you only have to do it once. Twice if you're an instructor. Any questions before we move on to other things? Anybody got anything outstanding they want to that they want to ask or talk about?
Virtual bundle password?
Oh, of course. Sorry. The virtual bundle. You did ask me about that. I apologize for that. The virtual bundle is split into 3 pods. The passwords for the virtual bundles is pod 1, pod 2, and pod 3.
What are we talking
about? All lowercase.
All in lowercase, and you telnet to www.qcat.org.
Cool. So no username, just the password.
Yes, that is correct. Just the password. And there is the information in chat. If you are the copy and paste type, and you want to stash that somewhere, obviously we will certainly go through that. Now, everybody's cool with. I'm not going to do it this week. Is anybody cool with everybody's cool with understanding eloquence at a reasonable rate, like about 45 or 55? I can slow it down a bit, but everybody's good at eloquence, pretty much?
Eloquence is fine.
Yeah.
Okay, just be warned that I am occasionally, and I will give you fair warning, I am going to drop my screen reader onto the chat, and I'm going to actually demonstrate things and show you how things work with the screen reader. Using virtual audio cable, and you will actually get JAWS in on channel at the same level as me, and you will see me telnetting into things and doing things on various bits of gear. Sorry, we had another question pending apart from the passwords to the pod, and I didn't get to that one. Perhaps we didn't. Okay, any other confusion? Or queries at this point.
So for next week, Carrie, we should read chapter 2 and have done the labs for chapter 1, correct?
That is correct. Or at least have done the labs for chapter 1 and have read chapter 2. The only reason I ask you to pre-read the stuff is I don't expect you to understand it. I just want you to have read it once so that when I start lecturing through this stuff, you will have seen it before and have some idea as to what sort of questions you would like to ask me to clarify the stuff that you have read. Okay. It's 10:29. Do people want to finish early today? Or shall I continue on and finish off the lecture time slot? It's up to you guys.
If you have other stuff to talk about, I'm good to stick around.
If you want to continue, I'm happy to listen unless you're eager to get going.
No. It's fine. Okay, I'll continue on. I'll start talking about some other things and we'll continue on. I was just making sure because sometimes people want to duck out earlier. And as I say, and since you're up, Barry, it's probably good that we do continue on. And we can see what we can get in and we can see what we can talk about. Okay. So, and nobody had really, apart from the Google Earth Labs and stuff, nobody has any other particular questions on Chapter 1. It's sort of one of those intro chapters that doesn't really go many places, but talks about a lot of things. Everybody's used a wiki, everybody's used a blog, people have used instant messaging, we're all cool with that. Any particular questions on that stuff? If you don't have any questions... And I will let you talk in a second, Matthew. If you don't have any questions and you happen to be alt-tabbed to the right spot, can you just type the word no into chat and that'll make things go much faster? Or even the letter N, and then I'll know that nobody's got any questions because it's this stupid habit I've got of going, has anybody got any questions? And then there's this horrible silence as everybody's got no questions. Sorry, Matthew, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, not a question. Just thought I'd say... It was mostly introductory stuff, as you say, but to me the most maybe valuable or interesting piece of it was when they went through the difference between the circuit switched networks from the phone system versus DoD and how the internet was designed. That was the gem that I found in Chapter 1. I don't know about anyone else. But
I must confess to liking that bit as well. Did anybody else read that bit where they talked about circuit switch networks and telephone networks and how when the calls got disconnected, if a circuit got broken, the call got disconnected and you had to re-establish, and they actually moved from circuit switch to packet switch, which allowed the multiplexing of multiple communication channels on one communications medium. Hey, that sentence made me sound really intelligent. But yeah, did everybody enjoy that bit?
Yeah, that was very cool. I like that.
Yeah, I think it's a great opening to network infrastructure, how it all works.
One of the things that occurs to me is that networking is one of those things that when you look at it, I mean, let's face it, the average person turns on their computer, boots it up, opens up an internet browser, and then whines piteously when www.youtube.com doesn't load and they can't watch the talking dog. The reality is that there is a lot more going on behind the scenes on your network than what a lot of people are aware of. And one of the things that is good about exploration and, in fact, discovery is that if you have more of an idea of how the networking stacks and protocols and stuff operate, you have more of an appreciation to the technical wizardry that goes on behind the scenes at an internet at home and at your internet service provider. And if you get really, really bored and you do happen to turn on your computer and go to Facebook, and this is not required, but we would like it if you liked us on Facebook. We are www.facebook.com/CiscoVision. CiscoVision! Yes, we're on Facebook. You don't have to like us, but it makes us look good. Alrighty, let's talk about a few key concepts and stuff that will work into the next lecture. But I want to start on a couple of things, and we'll deal with that before we move on to the stuff in Chapter 2 and that sort of thing. Actually, the other thing that was in Chapter 1, they talked briefly about quality of service. It's not part of our course, but if we have time, would people be interested in a mini lecture on quality of service and how it works? Okay, well, it doesn't look like anybody's interested. No, I'm just joking. I'm completely joking. All right. We have an overwhelming response to that, so we will have a talk on quality of service. The other thing I would like to point out is that if you guys have any ideas on what you, and I'll be posting this to the lists, if anybody has any good ideas for what you'd like presented at a CaviCast, or perhaps you would like to present a CaviCast, either on Ventrilo or Team Talk. We only use Team Talk if you need stereo, but we use Ventrilo if you are just doing it in mono. You'd like to get in touch with the instructors. We have rumblings of Chris is toying up the idea of demonstrating hosting a virtual Linux box in the cloud with Amazon. And I'd certainly like to hear that talk. I don't know whether anybody else would like to. So we might have that happen if he decides to do it. We don't actually have anything set for this week, and we don't have anything set for future. So I don't necessarily know when we'll do that, but we do have an open slot this week for anybody who wants to present, and we have open slots until we get some more ideas on what people want presented. The Cavicasts are not compulsory. However, they are on Friday morning Perth time. They are not compulsory, but we do like attendance. I don't know whether anybody here attended the QWS one we had last week, but that was a lot of fun, and the recording will go up soon. QWS being Quick Windows Sequencer. Alrighty, now, no questions, comments before we continue? Alrighty. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is probably the most popular protocol or networking protocol, a protocol as you would well know based on Chapter 1's notes, is the rules and regulations for exchanging information between computers. It deals with the timing, the way messages are formatted, breaking messages into manageable sections, whether they be packets, frames, segments, or bits. It deals with timing, retransmission, error detection, possible error correction, and all of those sorts of things. So if you think about like human conversations, if you get a phone call, you tend to pick up the phone and say, "Hello, insert your name speaking," and then the other person says, "Would you like to buy a new home loan?" And you say, "No, thank you, I'm busy having dinner, goodbye." And you slam the phone down. This is the protocol for your typical telemarketing call. Computers obviously have to have protocols as well that govern the rules by which they communicate. And one of the most popular protocols today is TCP/IP, which, if you expand it out, is Transmission Control Protocol / Internet Protocol. And it is the protocol that is responsible for carrying the vast majority of traffic on the world's data networks, especially the internet. Everybody has seen an IP address. I hope you've all seen an IP address by now. If you're writing them in dotted decimal notation, they look like this. Alrighty. Now, I'm going to talk about how IP addresses are made up. I'm going to talk about how they work, and I'm going to talk about, maybe not this week, but I am going to talk about things like subnet masks and stuff. If you simply put in the subnet mask of 255.255.255.0 without understanding what that means by the end of the course, I have failed to do my job, and I need to know about it. Alright, an IP address, or an IPv4 address more specifically. Can anybody tell me how long is an IPv4 address? Anybody know?
32 bits.
It is certainly 32 bits. Everybody knows that a bit is a 0 or 1 in binary. We're all cool with the concept of a bit. We all know that bits are an on-off state. If a switch is opened or closed, whether that be on or off, is 0 or 1. And an IP address is 32 bits long. You'll notice that IP addresses are usually written in what we call dotted decimal notation, which are four decimal numbers between 0 and 255, separated by full stops. If you were to convert all of those numbers back to binary and zero pad them so that they are 8 bits long, you would end up with 32 bits of IP address, and that is how long an IPv4 address is. Any questions on that so far? And I am going to talk about how binary works and stuff. Maybe this week, maybe I'll really get into it next week, but we'll see how we go. Okie dokie. Anybody tell me how long an IPv6 address is?
That was freaky. We just had like a whole stack of chat messages all came in, so I had my,
It was in unison. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. You won't get to hear that on recording, sadly, but that was my e-speak all echoing quite nicely. Okay, so basically we have a maximum of 4,294,000,000 addresses that we can use. We are starting to run out. Lots of network devices are using lots of IP addresses, and IP addresses are badly allocated, so people have subnets far bigger than what they actually need. As a result of this, we are looking at the move towards IPv6. And IPv6, we don't cover a lot in this course, but it's sort of mind-boggling. If you hand out, and I'll talk about the prefix lengths and stuff at some point. I sound like Doctor Who. I just should start saying, you know, I'll explain later. Luckily, we're not being chased by Daleks. Anybody who's in the UK will understand what I'm on about, but a lot of other ones of you may not know what Doctor Who is, so let's move right along. When you actually get handed out prefixes of IPv6 addresses, if you are handed out a /96 prefix, you actually end up with 2 to the power of 32 addresses for your own use, which means you get 4 billion addresses to allocate to your cat, your washing machine, your rug, the things on your bookcase, your mobile phone. I mean, IPv6 is big. It's a lot of addresses, and hopefully they don't make the same mistake that they made with IPv4, and they hand out addresses in a sensible manner. There is a KaviCast on IPv6, and I did that KaviCast back in 2007. A lot of it is still relevant. However, I have never... The IPv6 support in Windows Vista and 7 wasn't covered. Just a question to it. Has anybody ever got the El Torito tunneling stuff working under Windows 7/Vista and actually seen it tunnel like it's supposed to? No, I haven't either. Anybody else played with it? Okay, it's not critical. It's just one of these interesting things that I was curious about. Okay, IPv4, 32-bit IP addresses. Now, basically what happens is you've got networks and you've got subnetworks. A network is split into subnets, and subnets are usually how you divide machines up, either via administrative control or for policy control. So, for example, you may have, let's come up with a silly example. You may have a house in which there are 3 families living. And because none of the families really trust each other as far as the internet is concerned, you may wish to break the network into 3 subnets and actually separate each of the families off onto their own subnets so that the Smiths don't infect the Joneses with a virus who then infect the... I'm trying to think of another common name. It doesn't matter, but you get the idea. Now, how does this work? I'm going to do a basic overview of how this works, and I'm really going to delve into it deeply next week. For an IP address to have meaning, there must be 2 things. There must be an IP address, and there must be a subnet mask. Now, what happens is that an IP address is broken into 2 portions. The network portion and the host portion. So let's take a look. If we have the IP address 1... Oops, let me get into the writable edit box, that'll help. If we go 192.168.1.1, netmask of 255.255.255.0. Has anyone seen that stuff before? Okay, in simple terms, and this has become more complex later, and we will be doing VLSM in this course,
What that subnet mask says is it says the first 3 bytes of the network address 192.168.1.1 are the network portion, and the last byte is the host portion. So wherever there are 255s, that is the network portion, and wherever there is a 0, that is the host portion. So say, for example, we had 192.168.1.1 netmasked. It'd help if I could type. See how you have 2 lots of 255 and 2 lots of 0? This means that the network portion of that address is 192.168, and the host portion is the last 2 bytes. This is what we call classful subnetting. Has anybody got any questions on that so far? Okay. Let's say, for example, so the network portion tells you what network it's on, and the host portion tells you what host on that network. So if we have 192.168.1.1 mask 255.255.255.0, it follows that this is host 1 on the 192.168.1.0 network. Any questions? Everybody following this, or am I going too fast? Yes, as far as 1 is concerned, the 1 is the last byte in the network address. So classful subnetting always happens on a byte boundary. So class A, see how there is 1 byte for the network portion and 3 bytes for the host portion. That is a class A address. Can anybody give me an example of a very common class A address? Does anybody know which one I might be pointing to? It's non-routable, and it's really popular with certain router manufacturers.
10.
Well done, Drew. Has anybody ever seen addresses like 10.1.1.1 or 10.0.0.183 or 138, I should say? Certain routers use the 10 prefix for subnetting, and that is a class A address. Does anybody know off the top of their head approximately how many hosts can we have on a class A network? No good guess, but no cigar. That is correct, 16 million or so. How do we work it out? Okay, and this is a little bit of mathematics, so be warned. If this is a little bit confusing, you will need Windows Calculator, but we'll get to that in a minute. If you look at a Class A address, we have 1 byte for network and 3 bytes for host. Everybody cool with that? Alright. Now, if we have 3 bytes for host and we have 1 byte for network, how many bits do we have for host if we have 3 bytes, given that there are 8 bits in a byte? So if we have 3 bytes, how many bits have we got?
24.
Yes, we have an answer of 24. Anybody having trouble with this concept at this point? Because I can go back over that, but 24 is correct. Alrighty. If we want to know how many hosts we can have on a network, we take the host bits, the number of host bits, and we say 2 to the power of the number of host bits, and it's actually minus 2, but it gives you an idea of roughly how big it is. So, 2 caret h minus 2, where h is number of host bits. So 2 to the power of 24 minus 2 will tell you how many hosts we can have on a Class A network, and it's a roughly 16.7 million hosts. Alright, let's take a Class B network. Sorry, question?
Yeah, it's Jason. How do I do powers in Windows Calculator? Is it caret?
It's X, I think. I think you have to be in programmer mode or scientific mode, or the power stuff doesn't work. Anybody else confirm that or deny that? We can wait a minute while people check that out. Yeah, no worries. And I'm not being...
Yeah, it does have to be in scientific. Sorry, I was...
No, that's cool.
I was away from my
and I'm not being... Yeah, no, that's cool. And I'm not being condescending when I say this, but because I'm not 100% sure, but the helpful Windows calculator is really good, and nobody ever reads it. So I'm not saying you have to, but if you get bored, have a look at the help in Windows calculator. It's actually got all the keyboard commands in there, which I was quite surprised about. Yes, Marshall.
When we were taking Discovery, it appeared that Windows 7 calculator did not support octal, binary, that sort of thing. Is that still true?
That was never true, and it was Paul Fouché who actually corrected me on this. You put Windows 7 calculator into programmer mode, and up it all comes.
Okay, just check.
Yes, Matthew.
So, I follow for 2 to the power of 24. I understand that the 24 is the remaining 3 segments of bytes to figure out how many hosts would be possible, but I missed where the 2 part came from.
Oh, well, you see, there are 2 special addresses in a TCP/IP subnet. If all of the host bits are set to 0, that is what we call the network address. So in our example, 10.0.0.0 is the network address that refers to the 10 network. If all of the host bits set to 1, that is the broadcast address. And the broadcast address lets you talk to every machine on the 10 network, and that would be 10.255.255.255.
Yeah, sorry about that. That was helpful too. So you're referring to the minus 2, but I was asking about the for the formula. Where does the 2 in 2 to the power of 24? I missed where the 2 comes from.
Sorry, I was just finishing that thought off on the chat window before I got onto the other one. The way binary functions, which is the first thing I'm going to actually hit up next week, is that binary is a base 2 number system. And in a nutshell, when we have our number system, we have 10 to the power of 0, which is 1. So we have the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We then have 10, which is 1 times 10 to the power of 1. And we have 11, which is 1 times 10 to the power of 1 plus 1. And we have 19, which is 1 times 10 to the power of 1 plus 9. And then we have 20, which is 2 times 10 to the power of 1. If we have 100, that is 1 times 10 to the power of 2. If we have 1,000, we have 1 times 10 to the power of 3. And if we have 1,000,000, that's 1 times 10 to the power of 6. Yes, I'm going to go through this more slowly next week, I promise. We're just getting close to the end of time, but I just want to basically cover it. With binary, we actually use 2 to the power of, and we have 2 to the power of 0, which is 1, 2 to the power of 1, which is 2. We have the 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. And I will not sing the inchworm song, I promise. Although, if you are really unlucky, I will dig up the inchworm song and play it all to you next week. So basically, we use 2 to the power of... Yeah, just a whistle-stop overview, so I don't expect you all to understand this straight up. This is just like a jam-packed, like, this is the basic concept, and we are really going to go back and do this properly next week. So, essentially, you end up with 2 to the power of various things to get different values in binary, and we will show you how to convert that backwards and forwards next week. But essentially, because we've got 24 binary bits, we say 2 to the power of 24 will give us the maximum number that we can have in 24 binary bits.
That makes sense. Thank you very much.
Okay, guys, I'm just about to shut down the lecture for this week. Any queries, questions before I hit the stop button? And I promise we are going to slow down and do binary again next week. That was just a basic overview to give you some idea as to where we were going.